5:55 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The European Union takes another step to ease its migrant crisis. European Interior Ministers Tuesday approved a controversial quota plan to distribute 120,000 migrants throughout the 28-nation bloc. The majority vote, over the objection of several members, will be presented to an EU summit Wednesday. Nearly 500,000 migrants have crossed the Mediterranean this year, fleeing war and poverty. The UN Refugee Agency said the constant stream is so large the quota plan will not be enough to stabilize the situation. Melissa Fleming is a UNHCR spokesperson in Geneva.
The relocation program cannot be effectively implemented without creating adequate reception facilities in the countries where the refugees and migrants enter Europe.
Germany has by far accepted the most refugees, but Berlin's intelligence chief warned that radical Islamists could try to recruit refugees for terror attacks. In Burkina Faso, West African heads of state arrive at the capital Ouagadougou Wednesday to restore transitional president Michel Kafando to power following last week's coup. Cadre Désiré Ouédraogo is president of the ECOWAS Commission.
They have decided to dispatch tomorrow a high committee composed by head of states of 6 ECOWAS member states to go to Ouagadougou to reinstall President Michel Kafando in his capacity as president of a transition and to convey a solidarity message of ECOWAS to the Burkinabe people.
The presidential guard in Burkina Faso overthrew the transitional government last Wednesday, less than a month before scheduled elections. General Gilbert Diandre, the coup leader, said the polls were biased because supporters of former President Blaise Compaoré were barred from running. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says U.S. military experts believe Russian warplanes sent to an airbase in Syria are there for basic force protection, intended to protect Russian soldiers and assets on the ground.
Yes, they have increased aircraft, and there are certain kinds of aircraft there, which, depending on what the long-term decision is by Russia about its presence, could raise some questions. But for the moment, it is the judgment of our military and most experts that the level and type represents basically force protection, a level of protection for their deployment to an airbase, given the fact that it is in an area of conflict.
Meanwhile, the UN envoy on Syria launched another effort Tuesday to open peace talks. Stefan de Mistura announced working groups that will look at political and legal issues, military matters, and counterterrorism. On the eve of a visit Wednesday by Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to Moscow, Turkey dubbed Russia's rapid military buildup in Syria as dangerous. Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu has warned any military backing of the Bashar al-Assad government would hamper efforts to find a political solution. China's President Xi Jinping has called for better relations with Washington to help prevent what he said would be a disastrous conflict. The comments Tuesday came during a policy speech to business leaders in Seattle, Washington, first stop on a trip that will culminate this week with the Chinese leader's first state visit to the White House. The United States says it's asked China direct questions about a Texas businesswoman arrested 6 months ago for alleged spying but got no answers. U.S. spokesman Mark Toner Tuesday was asked about the case of Vietnamese-American business person Sandy Phan Gillis.
The U.S. consulate in Guangzhou has been providing consular assistance to her since her arrest on March 20th. We obviously are monitoring this case very closely. We've been to visit her 6 times since her arrest, and we've raised her case with Chinese government officials on multiple occasions.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman said Phan Gillis is suspected of endangering national security and that relevant Chinese authorities are pursuing the case under the law. In Nigeria, the death toll from bombings earlier this week in the Borno state capital Maiduguri and the village of Monguno has risen to at least 100. There was no claim of responsibility, but the Boko Haram insurgency is widely suspected. Meanwhile, Cameroon's army says it killed at least 11 Boko Haram militants in the northern town of Amchide early Tuesday. Pope Francis Tuesday arrived in Washington following a 4-day visit to Cuba. Over the next days, he'll meet with President Obama, address a joint meeting of Congress, and attend a World Family Conference as well as a UN General Assembly session. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Wednesday, September 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. ECOWAS is sending a new peace mission to Burkina Faso today, Wednesday, but the labor unions say ECOWAS is part of the problem.
We are fighting for peace in our country. We are fighting civil rights in our country, but we cannot accept that in our country, ECOWAS come to discuss with terrorists.
Bazie Basoma is the leader and chief negotiator of Burkina Faso's labor unions. The African Union talks targeted sanctions against Burkina Faso's coup leaders. Nigeria's crackdown on oil theft is making progress. And Malawi's President Peter Mutharika appeals for international food aid.
I'd like to appeal to all development assistance partners, other countries, non-government organizations, both in Mali and elsewhere, to complement government resources in assisting the food insecure household.
The Secretary General of the SPLM says President Kiir is not qualified to lead South Sudan's ruling party, and today is the second day of Pope Francis' visit to Washington, D.C. Those stories plus Marco Oman, Sports and Our Listener of the Day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader and chief negotiator of the Confederation of Labor Unions in Burkina Faso says the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is partly to blame for the political and military crisis in Burkina Faso. Bazie Basoma says ECOWAS should not force Burkinabes to negotiate with the coup leaders who, he said, have been characterized by the African Union as terrorists. His comments came as West African leaders who met Tuesday in the Nigerian capital, Abuja, announced they are sending a new peace mission to Burkina Faso. Today, Wednesday, ECOWAS Commission President Kadri Desire Ouedraogo said one purpose of the new delegation is to reestablish Michel Kafando as transitional president. But labor unions leader and chief negotiator Basoma says Burkinabes will not negotiate with what he called terrorists.
Our position is then, we say that ECOWAS is also a part of a problem in our country, because we cannot understand to see the president who try to discuss with terrorists in our country.
How is ECOWAS the problem for your country?
Well, ECOWAS is a problem because it is a furious organization who take a position to say our transitions that the work is to organize only election in our country. So we know that the causes who do a general insurrection in our country is not only for elections. The second thing is ECOWAS say that in our country, the military who take a power, who are be called by United Africa that terrorists. We don't understand, we will not accept that in our country, ECOWAS come to do mediation between terrorists on our futures. We said we are fighting for peace in our country. We are fighting civil rights in our country, but we cannot accept that in our country, ECOWAS come to discuss with terrorists.
ECOWAS said they want to find a workable solution, something that everybody can accept. That is, you, the civil society, the transitional government should be satisfied, and the coup leaders should also be satisfied. What do you think?
We said that we want whose personality is taken by terrorists, but must got again freely. And first, only, we say that after that, we want that transition take back a road as beginning. And really, we think that in our country, this group of military must to go in all army. We cannot accept that one party of this army take our future in dangerous road. We cannot accept that also.
So even if ECOWAS says that they would like for the transitional president, Mr. Kafando, to be put back, but also to give amnesty to the coup leaders, you would not accept that?
No, we cannot accept amnesty for them. Why? We will not accept army kill many bodies and after try to give them amnesty. It is not good. So for Kafando, it is normal to be a president. It is a president in Burkina Faso. It is not over person. So amnesty, we are not agree. We cannot accept that terrorists kill many bodies and now want to vote an amnesty. We are not against.
Bazie Basoma is the leader and chief negotiator of Burkina Faso's labor unions. He was speaking with me from the capital, Ouagadougou. A group of experts is compiling a list of people who played key roles in the overthrow of Burkina Faso's transitional government for targeted sanctions to be imposed by the African Union's Peace and Security Council. This, according to Ambassador Moul Katende, the chairperson of the AU Peace and Security Council. His comments came after the coup leaders in Burkina Faso refused to abide by a 96-hour ultimatum to hand over power to a civilian administration. Ambassador Katende tells reporter Peter Clotty that the targeted sanctions imposed by the Peace and Security Council against those involved in the Burkinabe coup will be tough and uncompromising.
We have set up a committee of experts to compile names of all those involved. Of course, we know the coup leader, that one is already the number one on the list. That committee of experts will come up with other names.
When the committee of experts come up with the names, when do you meet to push the process forward? What happens next?
Yes, a number of things to be done. First of all, we have got to work in coordination with ECOWAS on how to effect those sanctions.
How tough are these targeted sanctions, Ambassador Katende?
Well, they are tough. And if you have been following, the coup leaders are in a kind of a corner right now. The region is against them. The African Union is against them. The international community is against them. So they are trying to find a way out. And for us, it is important that we return to the status quo ante, meaning that the transitional arrangement established in 2014 be allowed to continue so that there are general elections in Burkina Faso next month.
Ambassador Katende, a lot of Africans have expressed concern that there should be a deterrent mechanism measure to prevent countries or military personnel from launching into such coup d'etat or violent overthrow or forceful seizure of power that the African Union has flatly said is sharply against. So as the chairman of the Peace and Security Council for this month, what are your views on this harsh deterrent measure to be implemented by the African Union?
Actually, the African Union is perhaps the only continent on this earth that has such measures. We have it inscribed in the Constitutive Act that anybody who takes power by force in a military coup and other related activities faces sanctions. That is a measure that is working. I think you'll agree with me that the rate at which coups were taking place in Africa has reduced. And even those that have taken place, our measures have been strong, and in many cases we have had the situations reversed and corrected.
Ambassador Moul Katende is the chairperson of the African Union Peace and Security Council. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. Nigerian security forces are cracking down on oil thieves in the Niger Delta region, and they may be getting results. Industry experts say if the theft is stopped, the country may start exporting more oil. Chris Stein has the story from Lagos with reporting in Warri by Hilary Oguru.
Pipelines crisscross the Niger Delta, transporting the oil that drives Africa's largest economy. But local communities say they benefit little from the wealth being pumped out of their backyard. So for years, thieves have been stealing crude from pipelines and selling it to illegal refineries to make money. Industry analysts and oil companies say thefts cut oil production by tens of thousands of barrels per day. President Muhammadu Buhari overhauled the leaderships of the military and the state oil company after taking office in May. Since then, security agencies have announced several raids on illegal refineries and the arrests of thieves. The crackdown seems to be getting results. VOA spoke with two people who worked at illegal refineries in Delta State. Neither wanted their name used because of the illegal nature of their work. Both said the raids had caused a shortage of crude that disrupted their refineries. A third man, who left the business 3 years ago and now works for an oil services company, says the reason for the shortages was simple. There are more soldiers patrolling the Delta.
Because of the army disturbance, it's not as functional as before again.
Because the army is patrolling, many of the refineries have shut down, he says. Before, the army wouldn't disturb them. But now he says many of the refineries can't work. Oil production in Nigeria is expected to rise from about 1.8 million barrels per day in August to 2.1 million barrels per day this month, and could reach 2.2 million barrels per day by the end of the year, says Dilapo Oni, head of energy research at Ecobank. The crackdown is one of the reasons for the expected rise.
So we're looking to ramp up to that amount, and that's really based on the fact that if we don't have any outages, we actually have, to some extent, reduced the oil test.
But with oil prices depressed globally, Oni says that means even those who are refining illicitly are finding the business less and less profitable. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Today's Wednesday, September 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's send a shout out to listeners on Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, and Brela FM in Nigeria. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, the SPLM, says President Salva Kiir is not qualified to chair the ruling party. Pagan Amun says Mr. Kiir has allowed his tribesmen to take over the affairs of the SPLM. Amun says senior members of the party have been threatening him since he signed the compromise peace agreement in Addis Ababa last month.
The official spokesperson of the government, Mr. Michael Mukwege, has been making those threats, but also a call for Paul and others in the government, including President Salva Kiir himself, that I have betrayed the government, that I should have not signed this agreement, and that I have committed a treason against their government.
Does this shatter your dreams for reunifying the party? Because I remember when you went back to South Sudan, you made a statement in Juba that the SPLM will never be the same, and you also said you will not criticize or go against the party line.
Yeah, I went back with a very clear mission, and I made that statement very clearly, that I am back to oversee the reunification of the SPLM as the Secretary General. And indeed, I was there in Juba with the component of the FDs, of the tripartite committee to oversee the implementation of the SPLM. Our efforts to reunite the SPLM has been frustrated by President Salva Kiir and his colleagues who are against the reunification of the party.
And what is the way forward for you now that your attempts to reunify the party is not yielding any fruits?
Of course, the way forward is to continue the efforts to rescue the SPLM as an organization, to reunite it. We have engaged the Tanzanians. I have visited Tanzania and met with the Secretary General of the CCM. As well, also, we went and met with the Deputy President of the ANC and Cyril Ramaphosa, who are the two co-grantors. And our engagement with the co-grantors are directed to rescue the SPLM from being made and splintered into tribal parties, trying to build a tribalist and a hegemonic tribal party to cause all this trouble, which will make South Sudan disintegrate into tribal entities, and it will make this conflict continue.
Let me take you back to where you were saying the SPLM is becoming tribal. Which tribe is trying to hijack the SPLM?
Of course, you know what is happening now in Juba. You have a Dinka or Jing Elders Council, which is almost becoming the leadership of the party that is in every policy, and it is the one that is making campaigns against other tribes.
Pagan Amun is the Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, the SPLM. He was speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Malawi's President Peter Mutharika has appealed for international help to cope with an expected food shortage that could affect 17% of the country's population during the coming months, VOA's Lamek Mansina reports from Blantyre.
In his national address on the food situation on Monday, Mutharika said people in 25 of the country's 28 districts are at risk of hunger.
Total of 2,833,212 people will not be able to meet their annual food requirement. In view of this, I'd like to appeal to all development assistance partners, other countries, non-government organizations, both in Mali and elsewhere, to complement government resources in assisting the food insecure households.
Mutharika said an updated national food assessment will be released in mid-October by the Malawi Vulnerability Assessment Committee.
Based on the historical trend, that assessment is likely to show a larger number of people facing hunger than is now the case.
Mutharika said Malawi needs about $150 million to attend to those in need of food assistance. The food deficit is a result of low yields of the main staple maize, largely because of recent flooding, which damaged at least 64,000 hectares of crop fields, mostly in southern Malawi. It is estimated that an additional 120,000 metric tons of maize will be needed to support the affected people. Mutharika said Malawi currently has purchased 30,000 metric tons from Zambia. The National Food Reserve Agency also said it was purchasing maize from Kenya. But analyst Rafiki Hajat of the Institute for Policy Interaction told VOA Area that past experience shows maize imports are not necessarily a means to avert a hunger situation.
We had a drought situation here in 1999 and in the year 2000, 42,000 people died, not because there was no maize, but because the price of maize was inflated by over 100% and they couldn't afford the maize.
Meanwhile, Malawi's national grain market has increased the price of maize in its depots by 5%, a move many feel will affect the buying power of poorer Malawians who need the foodstuff. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Pope Francis begins the second day of his much-anticipated visit to the United States today, Wednesday, in Washington, D.C., ahead of the Pope's meeting at the White House and his speech to Congress. Low-wage contract workers who cook and clean for U.S. lawmakers walked off their jobs at the U.S. Capitol asking for a $15 minimum wage and a union. As viewers seen the same reports, some of the workers say they are pinning their hopes on a letter they are sending to what they called the Pope of the Poor.
As Pope Francis' airplane approached, President Barack Obama, First Lady Michelle Obama, and their family were on hand at Andrews Air Force Base outside Washington to welcome the head of the Roman Catholic Church to the United States. A crowd of 1,000 selected ticket holders gave the pontiff an enthusiastic welcome. Earlier Tuesday, hundreds of low-wage workers at the U.S. Capitol walked off their jobs and rallied at a nearby Catholic church. They said they may be invisible to the powerful lawmakers they serve every day, but they know they deserve a better life. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders was at the church to support them.
Today, as we welcome Pope Francis to the United States and the U.S. Capitol, I hope that every member of Congress and the president will heed his call for social and economic justice.
One of the service workers is struggling, even though he has a job in the Senate cafeteria.
And homeless, sleeping on the street, you know, every day. You know, I was literally on the streets because we weren't making any money. I didn't have a livable wage, you know. And like I said, the few dollars that I did make in order for me to keep my hygiene up because I work in food service.
Worker Charles Gladden says this Pope gives him new hope.
I'm saying he's more adamant at speaking about the low-income people, speaking about social injustice, how he speak about the necessary thing that touches the little man.
One of Gladden's colleagues says she works two jobs, 70 hours a week, and that tough schedule likely caused her to lose her son at his birth. She hopes lawmakers listen to the Pope's message.
Hopefully, you know, they find it deep down inside that we got to pay our workers living wages. Nobody should have to suffer or go through what I've been through.
Inside the Capitol, Republican Senator John Thune said Pope Francis may have some different opinions on economics.
We hope that he can take away from visiting our country for the first time and recognizing that free enterprise is the greatest anti-poverty force that the world has ever seen.
There is no word on whether Pope Francis will directly respond to the Capitol workers' letter, but he is expected to address the issue of income equality when he speaks to Congress Thursday. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's portion. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with volleyball. Egypt dismissed Venezuela by 3-1 as Australia outplayed Tunisia in 3 straight sets at the Men's World Volleyball Championships in Tokyo, Japan on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Egypt play Iran as Tunisia encounter Canada. Turning to athletics, Jamaican 100-meter and 200-meter women's Olympic champion Shirley Ann Fraser-Pryce arrived in Windhoek, Namibia on Tuesday at the start of an 8-day visit. She is set to interact with various communities around the country to inspire young athletes. Fraser-Pryce's visit is expected to strengthen the growing ties with Jamaica, where several top Namibian athletes have trained in recent years. The success of the Jamaican camp was evident at the recent All-Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. Chipekapora Herunga clinched her second consecutive 400-meter bronze medal, while newcomer Lil-Ann Klassman bagged a bronze medal when she placed third in 400-meter hurdles in a new national record of 58.68 seconds. Among the men who trained in Jamaica are Hichiviru Kanjuka and Dantago Gurirab. They were part of Namibia's 4x100-meter relay that set a national record of 39.22 seconds to earn the silver medal in Brazzaville. Meanwhile, Uganda's Stella Chesang and Fred Musobo triumphed in the women's and men's races at the World Mountain Running Championships in Betsi Yokud in Northern Wales in Britain last Saturday. Chesang is the first African to win the women's race at this annual event ever since it started in 1985. She completed the 8.9-kilometer two-lap race in 37 minutes and 52 seconds, while Fred Musobo completed the men's three-lap 13-kilometer race in 49 minutes to ensure Uganda won the men's title for the fourth time, including the last 3 consecutive years. Previous Ugandan winners of the men's race include Godfrey Kusuro in 2009, Philip Kiplimo in 2013, and Isaac Kiprop last year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The leaders of 4 West African nations are traveling to Burkina Faso in hopes of resolving the nation's government crisis after a coup last week. And that is it for this Wednesday, September 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Marco Ullman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, President Obama welcomes Pope Francis to Washington, D.C. His Holiness' visit to the U.S. comes ahead of his trip to Africa in November. We'll discuss the significance of the Pope's travel next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical gem. I guarantee.